when we're not feeling satisfied, despite all of our best efforts to find it. And that song helpfully reflects on the words from 3,000 years ago that we just had read from the Bible in Ecclesiastes. A man who set out on an experiment to actually find deep meaning and purpose and satisfaction in life by only looking under the sun. And he is richer. He is more experienced than anyone ever will be. And yet he gets to the point and says, it's not enough. And so it is so good for us to be together, to gather, to consider big things of life. Let me add my welcome to you. We love that there are people here from all different backgrounds. Many who aren't sure about the God thing, the Jesus thing, how it works together, but so good that over these bunch of weeks, we consider what the Bible has to say about the good life, where it's found and where it's not found. So it'll be a good time for us doing it tonight and in the coming weeks. But before we go any further, I actually want to pause and pray to the God that I believe is there, who intends us to have life and actually ask of him. So would you join me in prayer? Well, Lord God, we do thank you for this amazing country that we live in. We do thank you for the peace that we enjoy, the many freedoms that we have so that we can gather together right now and consider big things. So I want to ask, please, that you would give us clear minds and honest hearts to do that, to consider our lives, but particularly in light of what you say about them, what you say about the world, about history, about reality. And I want to ask, please, that you would bring us blessing, that all of us might leave here and know real life that's found in Jesus. I want to pray this in his name. Amen. Well, we have been talking to our community over the last bunch of months and asking them, where do you reckon the good life is at? And tonight we're considering this answer that the community has given us: money, financial freedom. Now, I reckon most of us have heard the expression, money can't buy happiness. Yeah? Money can't buy happiness. But I suspect that most of us think, oh, but gee, I wouldn't mind a truckload just to test it out, right? Because I reckon I might be able to be the exception and get it right. After all, you've got the slogan that says, money can't buy happiness, but it can buy a plane ticket, which is kind of the same thing. And there's a whole bunch of different versions to that. Actually, if you just spend it right, if you just do it right, you'll find happiness. Now, I actually want to come back to this. But we shouldn't be too quick to dismiss any link between satisfaction in life and money. See, there's a whole bunch of data that's collected around the world, has been done so for a while now. Let me show you a chart that is called the Life Satisfaction Report, where people across the globe through the last bunch of years have indicated on a scale of 1 to 10 how satisfied they are in life. And what is really clear is that, you know, so you've got 2, 3, 4 down here and 7, 8, 9 and so on. What is really clear, look at all the African nations down here. They're threes, fours, fives. Look at us, Australia, United States, and so on. And so according to this kind of data, it's really obvious that the wealthier countries do report high levels of satisfaction compared to poorer nations. And the Bible agrees. The Bible views material poverty as a travesty, as devastating, as evidence of a world that is not right at its core. And so, in a very real sense, more money for some people can bring greater satisfaction, particularly for those who aren't able to meet life's most basic needs. But what about when you zoom into our country, where for the vast majority, we live a long way above the poverty line, even uni students on AusStudy. All right, it might feel like you do, and I'll come to why this happens, but we are predominantly well above the poverty line. Here's what we see when we zoom into Australia. Over the last 15 years, you can see that it's fairly stable. And yet, if you look closely, if you were to hover over them, it's actually trending downwards, if anything. Now, here's the striking thing about that, right? Because as we're kind of stable but trending downwards, if anything, this is over the same amount of time where our country has grown richer and richer every year. We're up to 29 years now and counting since the last recession. So a bunch of us weren't even alive when Australia had the last two quarters that actually went backwards. There's something called GDP, gross domestic product, which is the measure of an economy's health, so to speak, and it has gone up and up and up every year, so that we are a wealthier country together. Now, you might be thinking, not me, not my bank balance, but actually, we have three times the income than people in the 1950s, not just because of inflation, in real terms. Seven times the income than those in the year 1900. So that in the year 1900, the average worker had to work over 3 hours to buy a chicken. Now, it's half an hour's work for us. This is capitalism. Capitalism actually creates wealth. Wealth that wasn't here last year is here this year, and the snowball effect continues. And so, put simply, we are living in one of the wealthiest parts, in one of the wealthiest nations, in the wealthiest moment in history. Take that in, right? You, me, are living in the richest moment ever. And so, surely if the answer to the good life, to the life that's deeply satisfying, if the answer is money and wealth, surely we would be knocking it out of the park. Surely we would have arrived by now. Now, in one sense, you could say, well, look at us, we're on a seven. You know, Afghanistan's down on a three. Sure. But let's push into those sevens and eights average reporting levels, because I want to suggest there's a ton of evidence around which makes clear that just to be stuffed with more things doesn't equal satisfied. The problems of dissatisfaction are actually also on a scale never seen before. So let me just give you a few. Loneliness. Loneliness is an increasing problem, particularly in the West, so that now in the UK, the government, which has a minister for education, a minister for finance, a minister for health, has a minister for loneliness. Wow. What has happened amongst such a wealthy bunch of people that we would actually... And it's not just the UK, it's not just out there, it's in our backyard. A whole bunch of us, I know Stuck of you were involved 2 weeks ago, went around and knocked on literally every door in the surrounding suburbs of Churchy. We wanted to say good day, we're from church, nice to meet you, try and have a conversation, let people know what was going on. And as we had conversations with people, it was not uncommon to hear, "I'm lonely." Family breakdown. The family unit, which has been the bedrock of a stable society for millennia, is unraveling like never seen before. And you know this. You, our generation, are part of a generation who have never seen as much brokenness as in previous times. Surely, if the more wealth we had meant families would stick together, none of us would be broken. Mental health. Levels of depression and anxiety have never been higher. Now, be careful here. The cause of mental illness is complex. And so be very wary of simplistic diagnosis and solutions. But in terms of what we're considering tonight, with these studies that measure life satisfaction, do you know what the biggest factor that determines where someone sits on it? The biggest factor? Mental health. Bigger than what job you have, how much money you have. Massive. Well, what about this one? The leading cause of death for men aged 15 to 44? Suicide. So that if this group were to represent the coast and our country, the most likely cause of your death, man, will be your own hand. How can we be satisfied with that? I want to put to you that as you push and prod the sevens, as you look around actually what's going on in our country, in our community, in our lives, there is so much evidence that at the time of greatest material prosperity ever, we've never been poorer. And yet, our community clearly thinks that money's the way to the good life. Why? Why do we think that? Why do we turn to money? Why do we reckon that's going to get us there? Well, for at least three reasons. Let me race through them. It's security, status, and purpose. Security. See, having money gives us a sense of control in a world that's out of control. It makes me think, okay, well, the future, I don't know what it is, and I know it could have some hard stuff in it, but if I have enough money, it'll pad the future for me. I'll be able to actually kind of navigate. So, you know, if I have enough money for health insurance, and if I get sick, if I have an accident, I'll be able to get the best care in the best hospital, and so on. If I have enough money, if my car breaks, my life won't come to a stop. I'll actually just be able to get it repaired, and on I'll go. In fact, I don't know if you've seen the ad. Some of the ads will tell us, if you see a scary spider in your car, just go buy a new car. Because money means I've got security, I've got options, I've got power. Secondly, status. We like to tell ourselves that we live to the beat of our own drum, but the honest truth is we don't. So much of how we feel about ourselves, how we think about ourselves, is in comparison to people around me. And how do I measure up to people around me? And so, you know, if I earn more money, if I come into more money, then I can kind of go to the better schools and get the better jobs and then earn more money and drive the bigger car home to the bigger house in the better suburb. And I can just look around and I'm actually feeling all right about how I'm doing in life. Our sense of self-worth is so often based on where we are on the status ladder, and money pushes us up it. It's money that gets me the clothes, that gets me the status is a huge reason we turn to it. And thirdly, and I want to put to you that this has particularly been a shift in more recent generations from boomers down to millennials, where generally speaking, baby boomers were more about building their quarter acre kingdom. Now you get the block, you get the house, you get the car, you get the boat, you get the caravan, you get all the toys and all the stuff and all the holidays and on it goes. Whereas there's been a noticeable shift from that generation to millennials, who aren't about collecting stuff as much as they're about collecting meaningful experiences. And part of this is because millennials have seen firsthand the emptiness of just collecting more stuff. Millennials are from broken homes. Millennials have seen, man, that is not the answer. And so instead, value time doing things that bring deep purpose to my life. So maybe that's volunteering in an orphanage in Nepal. Maybe that's giving yourself to the cause of the environment. Really good things, but actually money is what I need in order to enable myself to go do them. Got to pay for the plane ticket to go to that place, to do that thing, to have that experience. Money is the necessary purpose enabler. So there's just three reasons I want to suggest why we do actually keep coming back to money as the answer for those things which are hugely important to being human. But here's the thing. It doesn't work. It doesn't work. And we're going to come to Jesus, who diagnoses the biggest problem with it. We'll come to that in a moment. But before we do, let me give you just three more basic observations about why it doesn't work. And I know I'm talking predominantly to people who are millennials and who have more time ahead of them in the workforce. You don't have much money at the moment, but it's coming. And so I want to urge you to hear what it is about money that's so seductive, why you will be tempted there, but why it's so empty and doesn't work. Firstly, it's a condition that psychologists call adaptation. And I reckon you'll recognize it pretty quickly. You come into more money. Maybe you get your first proper job with a first proper paycheck. I still remember it. Wow. Compared to delivering newspapers, wow. The hit was huge. And then I'd work another week and it would come again and again and again. And man, I'm just sitting on this, it was cash, I didn't even bank it. I'm just sitting on this wad of cash, and the feeling was fantastic. It really was. But here's the thing. Pretty much every week since then, I've had a paycheck come in to differing degrees by the grace of God. And it's only tracked essentially over time up and up and up. And do you think each week I'm getting it? I'm just going, nah, not even close. We come into things that really do give us... You get the new phone. Oh, how good's this thing? You get that next trip. Oh, how good is it? But you know what happens? That hit, it's a real hit. It's short-lived. Now, enjoy this because typically as you're younger and don't have as much... the hit does last longer. So enjoy it. But as you come into 30s, 40s, and then beyond, the hit, it's gone like that. 15 years ago, before the iPhone was even a thing, no one even heard about it, I had a job which gave me something called a BlackBerry. Now, you're thinking that's just a fruit, like an Apple computer. A BlackBerry, have you seen a BlackBerry? Do they still exist? No, they're probably like slimline and sexy now, but I got this thing. It was a phone, right? A mobile phone. So that wasn't radically new, but the thing that was new about it, and I remember pulling it out of my pocket one night with a whole bunch of mates around because I'd just got it, and I had to have really big pockets because it was so wide. It had an actual keyboard on it. Not a screen where you took, but an actual QWERTY keyboard. And I pulled it out, and I'm like, check this out. It goes on Google. And people are just like coming in, and I'm typing in like the surf conditions or whatever for that week. And it's like loading, loading, loading. But everyone's mind is going, you're on Google? Wow. It was just like, now I could whip out an iPhone 11 and stream a big movie in high def like that, and no one would care. No one would care. It's adaptation. What was shiny and exciting and special yesterday is now ordinary today and it's invisible tomorrow. I don't want to keep saying this through the night, but trust me, if you haven't got there, you talk to people in 30s, 40s who have come into money and you ask them how much the new car and the bigger house and the reno and the more expensive holiday, you ask them how long the hit lasts. And it's actually been called the hedonic treadmill. Quite like that. The hedonic treadmill. Hedonism, the pursuit of pleasure, treadmill. Because here's the deal. In order to get the hit, you have to get on this treadmill and it's moving fast. The hit wears off. And so you just got to keep running faster to the next thing. And to the next thing and to the next thing. But here's the problem. It's subject to the law of diminishing returns. So that what gave me a hit kind of here, the smaller thing, I actually now need a bigger, more exciting, better thing to get the same hit. And now it needs to be bigger and bigger and bigger. The writer of Ecclesiastes 3,000 years ago said, whoever loves wealth will never have wealth enough. It really is true that generally the more you have, the unhappier you will be. Adaptation, the hit, doesn't last. Secondly, and I do think this is a bigger thing when you're younger and wears off as you get older. It's the status thing. It wears off when you hit middle age and you stop caring what anyone thinks about you anymore. And I'll just wear what I wear and do what I do. But particularly younger, the status issue I mentioned earlier, we compare ourselves to those around us. And you'd think that as you come into more, you'd start to feel better about yourself compared to those around you who have less. But this odd thing happens. Because the more that we come into, we actually start to shift the circles that we move in, and we actually move into wealthier circles. And the effect loses its effect. You know, it's like you did the share house thing. You're living in a share house for ages, and then you find the guy, the girl. You move out of the share house, you move in together, maybe you get married. Now, all of a sudden, you've got combined wealth. You've got double income. You got way more coin than old mate Jack, who's still doing the share house thing. But now, instead of rubbing shoulders with the share house kind of crew, whose idea of a holiday is road trip, jump in a van and just stop wherever, sleep in the car, you're now in the, oh, actually, we've just bought a house, in the mortgage crew. We're in the double income thing. We're in the professional thing. Whose idea of a holiday is now Fiji, Europe. And you're like, oh, I'm just struggling to pay the mortgage, let alone. And so you've come into more money, you've moved into different circles, but even though you might have gone up a rung on the ladder, there's always so many more people ahead of you. The status thing doesn't even work. Thirdly, the security thing. It is true that money does afford us some kind of security into the future, but it's nowhere near as dependable as we think. Let me show it to you. Here's a chart that tracks the life satisfaction levels of people in the Netherlands. They're the winners, by the way. The UK, France, Greece is the bottom one. Now look at Greece. They're kind of tracking along here above 60%. Wow, doing well. Bit of a dip. Boom. What happened? 2007, their economy crashed. Just the floor fell out of the country. There were people queued up at banks just trying to get their cash out and couldn't. And have a look at what happens to the satisfied rating, but have a look at where it's still at. It has ongoing consequences. Now, you might not remember this firsthand, but 2008, there was a global financial crisis, and somehow Australia was kind of bubbled a little bit from that, and we didn't feel the impact like the rest of the world did. But so many people overnight had nothing. The super, the retirement, the investments, the job, it just disappeared. Money is nowhere near as dependable as we'd like to think. Global economies are far more fickle than we realize. Or even personally, you lose your job. You lose your health, your ability to work. And this security blanket, it disappears. One of my favorite proverbs from the Bible says this: cast but a glance at riches and they are gone. For they will surely sprout wings and fly off to the sky like an eagle. Especially if you have a whole bunch of kids, right? Just off it goes. So there's some basic reasons why it doesn't work. If we're honest, if we pause, this kind of, I just need more and then I'll be, it doesn't work. In fact, it goes the other way. But there's a bigger, deeper reason. This is where I want to bring us. That's just been essentially one big introduction before bringing us to the words of Jesus. And you'll find them printed in your sheet there. Turn them open. If you've got a Bible, crack it open to Luke 12. Because whilst we can observe those kind of things that I've offered, there is something massive and deep that Jesus brings. Luke chapter 12, verse 13. Someone in the crowd said to Jesus, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." Ricky Gervais has this good joke where he says, "Where there's a will, there's a relative." You might not have experienced wills yet, but you will, and it's true. Man, someone dies, a will is left, and there's conflict. Jesus replied, "Man, who appointed me a judge or an arbiter between you?" Basically, he says, "I'm not here to referee your cat fights, okay?" Then he said to them, Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. Life does not consist in an abundance of possessions. There it is. There's Jesus' massive reason for why money, materialism is not the way. Life, true life, rich life, satisfying life, it's not there. It's not in the abundance of possessions. And I believe he would say to the millennials, it's not in the abundance of meaningful experiences. Now, notice where Jesus locates the problem, though. He says, watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. And it's from greed that the pursuit of life in abundance of possession comes. The problem isn't money. Jesus is not down on money, on material things in and of themselves. The problem is greed. Where's greed? It's not out there. It's not. It's in here. It's in the human heart. It's in the human condition. Bree and I made the mistake of giving our kids the game Monopoly for Christmas. You remember Monopoly? Yeah. And it's now actually Monopoly Deal. It's different to the one that we probably grew up playing, the board game, which would take forever. Monopoly Deal is like really quick. But it does exactly the same thing. I tell you, I don't think I've seen them play the game without it coming to fisticuffs, right? Fights and tears. It's a mess every time. And I said to Bree, oh, what have we done? We've kind of introduced this corrupting force of monopoly into our home and it's just wreaking havoc. And I didn't say that. I said, look at that. Look at what monopoly is doing. It is drawing out the corrupt nature in our kids. I didn't teach them to do it. It's not as though monopoly or society or something happened and taught my kids to be greedy. No, no, it is there in the human condition. And it's been on show even before monopoly. As soon as you give someone the ability to mine, more of mine, it'll come out. And here's the tricky thing about greed. It's a deadly sickness. It'll kill us. We'll come to that. But the tricky thing about the sickness is one of the symptoms of it is that you're blind to it. Greed is a deadly sickness according to Jesus, but the problem is the symptom is you don't see it in yourself. How easy is it to spot greed out there and in him and in her? Look at what he's bought this time. Look at where they've gone this time. Oh, they're so discontent, so greedy. Me, I just needed a new phone. I just needed the next month of Netflix. Do you see it in yourself? It's actually so hard to see it in yourself, which is why Jesus says, watch out. Watch out. Look carefully. It is so deceptive. And then he goes on to tell a parable, a story about how dumb it is to seek life in money. Look at verse 16. He told them this parable, "The ground of a certain rich man yielded an abundant harvest. He thought to himself, 'What shall I do? I have no place to store my crops.' Then he said, 'This is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones. And there I will store my surplus grain. And I'll say to myself, you have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy. Eat, drink, and be merry.'" Now, a pretty straightforward story so far. It's an agricultural one, yeah, but it's very similar to the modern Aussie middle-class dream, yeah? Work, invest well, have the nice home, retire and enjoy the life. Or let me give you, I think, the more millennial version, which is captured in what's called the FIRE movement. I don't know if you've heard of this. I'm not recommending it to you. I don't think it's all bad. but I'm not recommending to you. But the FIRE movement stands for Financial Independence Retire Early, where the whole goal is to actually work really, really hard and to be as frugal as you can be. Don't splurge. Don't do the consumer thing. Invest really smartly. And the goal is that as you invest and as you save, you start building this snowball. And then as you put your savings onto it and as it pays dividends, the snowball rolls down the hill, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And the whole goal is being as smart and as ruthless about it as you can so that you can retire early. But the thing about the retire early thing that the FIRE movement wants to make known is like you're shooting for the 40s, right? Late 30s, early 40s. Retire, never having to work for the man again. It's not so you can sit back on the beach and blah, 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 do the Australian dream. It's actually so that you can now give yourself to work that's meaningful. So that you can actually give your time to things that bring you deep satisfaction. And so you don't have to work for the man anymore. And if that's volunteering in an orphanage, you're not relying on a paycheck to do that. It's essentially what Harry and Meghan are saying that they want to do in a very royal way. They want to be financially independent so that they can do the things that matter to them. But here's the deal. No matter your version, whether it's the kind of more middle-class Australian dream with lots of stuff or the more millennial, give me the meaningful experiences, Jesus says it's dumb. Actually, more than that. Have a look at verse 20. But God says to this man, God says to the person who pursues life through materialism or through meaningful experiences, you fool. This very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? This is one of the most sobering verses in the Bible, I think, because it's the only place in the whole Bible where God addresses someone directly with the words, you fool. Can you imagine that? That the living God Almighty, and you stand before him, and the only two words that he has for you, or at least the first two words he has for you are, you fool. Wow. That will break you. A man who thought that his security and status and purpose would be satisfied by his money or maybe by the experiences. Foolish. So why? Why is it foolish? Well, because it doesn't work when you're living the material path for the reasons that we've already considered. But here's the big one that Jesus brings us. It doesn't work when you're dead. One microsecond after you take your last breath, and guess what? That microsecond will come. I know it's not near for a whole bunch of you. You don't even want to think about it. It will come. A nanosecond after that, the person who has pursued the good life, the full life, the rich life through materialism will stand before the living God naked, bankrupt, a fool. Why? What did this man do? Well, who's missing in the story? Well, God and basically anyone and everyone else on the planet. Here is a person who has gone after satisfaction according to them without any regard to God. And so what Jesus says to us with the story of this man is there is a life beyond this one. It's one of, I think, the biggest things for our community and our generation to consider. As quickly as we like to say we are a secular community, as I do chat to people one-to-one, it pretty much always comes out that they go, I do think there is something more. At least I hope there's something more. I hope I'm more than just a bag of bones in a, you know, bunch of skin and here for a brief moment of time. The Bible says, yes, there is more to you than that. But to disregard the spiritual dimension to life now will have implications into eternity. But you see, that fire movement that I just mentioned earlier, it embraces the philosophy of short-term pain for long-term gain. Work really hard, go without now, suck it up, don't consume, so that you can have this long-term gain of be your own boss, have your own meaningful experience. But Jesus goes, whoa, way too short-sighted. That gain is way too short-lived. Because he'll say elsewhere that what good is it for someone to gain the whole world, all the material possessions, all the experiences that money can buy, and yet forfeit their soul? What good is it? Jesus goes, here's what I want you to do, says Jesus. I want you to measure your life on the scale of eternity. Not 50, 60, 80, 90, if you're lucky, years. He says, you are made for eternity. And to ignore the spiritual dimension to you, to ignore the God who is spirit, will actually impact the rest of eternity. And so the thing that I've been really grieved about as I think about this topic this week, as we asked our community, what do you reckon the good life is? Where's it found? One of the biggest answers, money. We are living, according to Jesus, in a very sick community. Amongst a people who are cut off from true life, real life, now, but into eternity. So what's the medicine to this sickness? Well, the good news is that's why Jesus came, to bring it. And we're going to unpack this more fully in a couple of weeks' time, but let me point out how we do see it in this part of the Bible. Carry on in verse 21. Because Jesus contrasts the fool with someone else. He says, this is how it will be with whoever stores up things for themselves, but is not rich toward God. What's the medicine to the fool who pursues life through materialism? It's to be rich towards God. What does that mean? What does it mean to be rich towards God? Well, here's what it doesn't mean. It doesn't mean that you need to give God money, as though he somehow lacked stuff, as though he was kind of incomplete and insecure and needed you to prop him up. It's not as though, okay, you've just got to start being generous to people around you, then you'll start to feel better about life and God will smile on you. That's not what it means. What does it mean? Well, I reckon Jesus unpacks it some more as he gets to his conclusion of this section. And if you've got a Bible, jump down to verse 32, or I'll bring it up on the screen if you don't have one. Because he keeps going. He talks about possessions, food, clothing, and so on. Then he says, verse 32, to his followers, don't be afraid, little flock, for your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give to the poor. Provide purses for yourselves that will not wear out, a treasure in heaven that will never fail, where no thief comes near and no moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. There is Jesus unpacking what it means to be rich towards God. It's to have God as your treasure. It's to have God as your ultimate treasure. The one that you will cling to death and hold loosely and let go of anything else in comparison. This is actually an issue of the heart. This is not, let me give you three steps from greed to generosity and you work them out. No, no, no. How does the human heart, which is by nature selfish and greedy and me, 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 how does a human heart get from there to actually treasuring God, who I can't even see, and having him such a treasure that I would actually let go of the things of this world and be generous with him? How do you get from there to there? Not by three steps, but by experiencing the radical grace of God. There is no other way but to experience the lavish, extravagant love of God for you. So extravagant, so lavish that it would melt your heart. More accurately, that it would actually give you a new heart, a new you, with new ultimate affections, with a new concern for who you would honor and who you would serve and how that would bleed out into life. But notice the order. So Jesus is saying, give stuff away. But have a look at verse 32. He says, your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom, so now you give of your wealth. He doesn't say, give of your wealth, and then God will be pleased to give you the kingdom. Now, what's the kingdom? The kingdom is shorthand language for receiving every blessing that God has promised. Every single one of them. In fact, he starts to unpack or hint at some of the blessings right here. Don't be afraid, little flock. That is, God becomes our shepherd. The one who cares for our needs, who leads us into pasture. For your Father, that you might actually know God as Father. An altogether good and loving Father. And he's been pleased to give you the kingdom. He's your king. Now, that's not actually the gift, because he always has been, always will be. The gift is that you would actually recognize that and delight in his rule. Receive his rule gladly. But the heart of all the blessings to receive the kingdom is forgiveness. Jesus came to actually make a way for the greedy, selfish people like me, like you, to come back into relationship with God, and he'll do this in his death. We'll unpack that some more as we go. Notice this. It's not start to do a bunch of things, give away, then you'll feel good and God will love you. Receive the love of God in Jesus. And something counterintuitive then happens. Actually, as I do give of my wealth away, of my time away, I actually tap into the life that I was made for. I actually really do have deep satisfaction. Not for the selfish reasons about I want to, you know, serve for this cause so that I feel good, but so that I would bring honor to my God who has loved me. And notice what else happens. Our fears are reoriented. Jesus says, don't be afraid. He's just been talking about clothing and food and housing and all those. He says, don't be afraid. Why not? Because your security is not in your bank balance. It's not in global economies. It's in Almighty God who loves you as a father, who has the future in his hand, who controls it all. Your security is safe. Your status, it's not found by looking around anymore. It's by receiving the acceptance from God who says, I don't care about the things that the world cares about. I value completely differently. I don't care how much money you have or don't have. I don't care what you look like. I don't care what you've achieved. If you've come back to me through Jesus, you're mine. What a status to have. And your purpose. It's not in money. It's not in the things that it can afford. You work out that your purpose is no longer to scratch every itch that needs satisfying. Your purpose is actually to experience knowing God. Let me finish with an illustration of a true story from a pastor 2 centuries ago that makes this point. And I'll quote him directly. He says, I was having a talk with a man who was young, rich, and in every enjoyment of every good thing this world could give him, and who maintained that religion was a melancholy thing. I cannot stand your Christian people, he said. Their religion doesn't make them cheerful or agreeable, and they're always in trouble, moaning and groaning and complaining. Come along with me, my friend, I said. We'll visit one of your complaining Christians. I took him to a wretched, fireless garret, which I just take it to be a dodgy old place 200 years ago, where beside the empty grate sat a poor old woman, doubled up with rheumatism and groaning with the pain. Oh, she said, it's so bad, and it never gets any better. Well, my friend, I said, look at this young man. He is rich, he is healthy and strong, and he has every pleasure that earth can give him. And he is without God in the world. Tell me now, would you change with him? To which she replied, change with him? There's a woman who had found ultimate treasure. So that no matter what was going on for her, she was rich into eternity. Friends, you may not be there yet. You might get there into the future, but maybe you are, where you're recognizing the dissatisfaction from anything and everything that this world can offer. Let that be a clue. Let that point you to the fact that you were made for more. You were made to know your God. Because here's the thing about knowing God. We'll never get to the end of his goodness. We will never get to the limits of his power, of his knowledge, to the depth of his love for you. So here's the thing. We never get bored with God. We'll never get dissatisfied with him. If you are at a point where you go, yeah, I think I want to look into this further, do that. Don't do what so much of Australia will do, which is just get back to busying yourself, chasing after it elsewhere. Don't get distracted. Do something about it. Come to that life series that you heard mentioned before. Keep coming back to this series as we're going to keep unpacking what the Bible has to say about the good life. But do something with it. As a church, this is the big thing we're on about. I don't know what you think churches are on about, but churches for 2,000 years who have understood the message of the Bible have been about this, coming to know the good life in our God, coming to point others to what we have found in him. And so there is nothing that brings us greater joy than to see people keep coming to find Jesus. And I want to point your eyes to the screen as we're going to check out a video of a story of a woman amongst us who has been on the journey that we've been considering tonight, and who has found what she was looking for in Jesus.